next item is the local climate action planning process report. Say that 5 times very quickly.
It's really easy. LCAP.
Crystal Riddlewald from the city is going to start this off.
Good afternoon. So I'm Crystal Riddlewald. I'm the environmental administrator in the city of Charlottesville, and joining me in the presentation is going to be Andrew Green, sustainability planner here at UVA in David Newman's office, and Andy Lowe, the environmental compliance manager over at Albemarle County. I'm going to start off. We initially brought this concept of working collaboratively, the city, the county, and the university, on the subject of climate action planning back in January of 2009. And I can't remember how many of you were here at the table at that time, but we got consensus from you in support that that seemed like a good idea. And essentially, once a set of recommendations and products came out of that process, to bring them back so that you would have a chance to consider their timeliness and their appropriateness for then moving forward and presenting to PAC, which would, if you agree, occur in 2 weeks simultaneously with the TJPDC presentation. So if you remember, again, I was here then in January just to give you an update on that process and to provide essentially an invitation and a reminder that there was a community workshop being scheduled. At that time, it was supposed to be imminent, and we had a major ice and snowstorm that caused the really exciting opportunity to reschedule it by a month. I'd like to say I think it turned out better because we had an additional month to work on it. What I thought might be useful just at the onset of this presentation is to offer you a couple of key themes to keep in mind as we go through it. Essentially, this process recommends a tailored approach by each entity in moving forward. It's based on a diverse set of inputs, community inputs. It promotes voluntary action. It seeks synergies that make economic and environmental sense, and it presents a framework for continuous leadership by each of the entities involved. So on this slide, basically, we know that there are a number of very formal public commitments that were made by the city and the county in 2006 and in 2007 with respect to greenhouse gas emissions and reductions. In the city, that came in the form of endorsing the U.S. Mayor Climate Protection Agreement, and in the county, it came in the form of unanimously approving a resolution linked to the U.S. Cool Counties Climate Stabilization Declaration. So these two commitments essentially gave the marching orders to staff to then take the next step, which was develop a baseline, collect the data from the community about where the emissions are, what are the sectors and the sources of emissions in the community. I would say fortuitously, UVA did a baseline of their own area and operations in that same time frame. So we had the opportunity to aggregate the information for the city, county, to include the university, and it results in this pie chart. And it's a pie chart that we've shown a number of times, but it's worth starting off with it because you can certainly look and see that these two areas, residential, commercial, institutional, are the built environment and largely reflect energy used in those existing buildings. And then obviously another major sector is the transportation sector. What came as somewhat of an initial kind of key fact and surprise when this data was put together is that those operations linked to city and county municipal operations are really 4% of the total picture. So 4% is not a lot. It's an important number, but it's not a lot when you're talking about community-wide emissions reduction goals. As I mentioned, the university's data is in here, and it's in the red section. So it's about 10% of the overall pie. So with the fact that the city-county operations are about 4%, and with the fact that it remains absolutely important and essential and effective for city and county operations to be as efficient as possible and to continue to pursue projects that are linked to emission reductions, it becomes apparent that the community-wide focus of those city and county commitments requires the engagement and the accounting of the important efforts by the community at large. So what I would suggest is that our effort moving forward is not to shift the energy responsibility amongst the different sectors, but it's really to take this entire pie chart and shrink it overall so that we see reductions within all those sectors, essentially making the footprint smaller. And so if you think about it, when we consider emission reductions that are linked to using less energy, that's linked to lower utility bills or reduced transportation costs, the hope and the goal is that that's money saved, and that's money saved by more money and funds in the pockets and in the businesses and in our community. So if they aren't spending it on utilities and those dollars aren't flying out the door or in the envelope or via your electronic payment, it's essentially staying here, either for food on the table and or basic economic activity in retail and services in our community. The underlying challenge, though, is how do we get there? What's the goal is how do we do that? If we recognize that the community all plays a role in this, how do we get there? And so in light of that, the senior executives from the city and the county came together and issued an invitation to a number of community representatives to participate in a multidisciplinary team to basically assess some of the appropriate practices, their applicability in our community, and to participate and to provide strategies, propose strategies for the participating entities. And you'll recognize the signatures on the letter here. Everyone who received an invitation actually agreed to serve on this committee. I don't know if you can see the names here. They're listed on the back page of the draft report that was sent to you. But really the point that I want you to consider is the diversity of the steering committee. There are and environmental folks, and policy folks, and elected representatives, planning commissioners, folks from the Chamber of Commerce, Department of Forestry, some of the large development companies, the Home Builders Association, and then various roles and perspectives from the university. So this was a very interesting group to work with, and after a period of time that started close to 2 years ago, these folks have stuck with this process, and that's been very encouraging. Although I will admit that there was some interesting debate and discussion about some of the practices and some of the ways to implement them, at the end of the day, we have a committee that stands behind the report that we're going to talk about today. So this is a kind of an overview snapshot of the process and the structure. As I said, the concept was presented to you in January about a year and a half ago. The steering committee actually convened in August of that same year, and later you'll hear in the presentation what kind of took place in that interim time. The steering committee was supported by a really incredible team and network of local subject matter experts. We had a lot of staff input and conversations. And there were numerous focused discussions either within these working groups and then between the working groups and the steering committee. And the graphic here, which is a little difficult to see, is intended to convey that we had to organize it somehow. And so there were working groups focusing on energy and the built environment, or energy and efficiency, energy and transportation. There was certainly a lot of consideration of public education and outreach or public engagement. How do these issues get communicated and discussed in our area? And a lot of that rolled up, if you look at these bars, rolled up into a set of strategies of how are we going to do it? How can we propose to the city and the county and the university and take into consideration the actions already ongoing in the city, county, and university to make this happen and ensure that our private sector is part of this? Because a lot of the good examples are in our private sector, either other buildings that are green buildings, business practices that have been shared with us and that we can certainly speak to if you're interested. And then the whole process, the discussions with working group members, all of the meetings with the steering committee had active participation and facilitation by city, county, and university staff, some of whom have also transitioned in and out over time. As I mentioned, we actually had this workshop in February of 2011. We had a number of materials that we were able to produce, and there are fact sheets from that event that we brought with us today, if you care to take them with you. They try to focus on the various subjects of energy and the built environment, energy and mobility, energy sourcing, energy and materials, and energy in the landscape. There was a fair amount of PR done for the workshop, which included a number of interviews. Our steering committee members went on WINA and did some interviews. There were some articles in the local Daily Progress, a couple of ads, et cetera, et cetera. Article in the Chamber of Commerce newsletter. So again, a lot of the steering committees helped communicate out the workshop and the subject of it. Frankly, we did a really fun interactive survey where everyone was handed a clicker and they could answer questions live, and you could see these blue bars show up on the screen. So there was an opportunity for folks coming to the meeting to see what everybody else was thinking. And in reality, there were some expected outcomes that reflect who came to that meeting, but there were also a couple of unusual ones, such as a lot of support for alternative transportation and public transportation, and yet the fact that 76% of the people in the room most often use their own car. And so it is actually just a reality check of what's happening in people's minds and desire and what's actually happening on the ground. There were other questions about why somebody would be interested or motivated to reduce their energy use. But in the end, the conversation that took place that evening and the questions from the survey and the answers, they really helped further the discussions, and they gave us an idea of what the community is interested in. And I would say kicked up the conversation about this topic in general, and it has continued to be kicked up subsequently. So the first product that came out of the LCAP process, or LCAP, is this five-part framework of our community energy profile. And I would say it's essentially a product that organizes the discussions that were taking place and started to give a sense of the direction that the steering committee was moving in. It was shared with you in January, and it was kind of the focus of that community workshop again, really conveying that the role of energy touches a lot of these familiar themes: mobility, landscape, sourcing. And in many cases, it's easy to think of examples and strategies that fit into those categories, whether it's energy efficiency or whether it's renewable or alternative energy sources. But some of these topic areas, such as energy and materials, really get at things like repurposing buildings because of the energy that already went into building it in the first place. Energy in the landscape and the role and the benefit of forested landscapes on a large scale. It's also it is a framework that was designed specifically to represent and reflect the role of energy, and it's offered by the steering committee to inform and to contribute to future planning, decision making, and implementation. What it's not is a prescriptive or a mandatory set of requirements. It's really put out there to inform the action plans and the next steps of each of the participating entities. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Andrew, and then we'll all be available for questions afterwards.
I think in this five-part framework, I'm paraphrasing then the steering committee's discussion, but in this five-part framework, the steering committee really hit upon there was a multitude of co-benefits. In some cases, those co-benefits were as compelling as some of the original reasons we started the process. Environmental, of course, but financial, economic, good infrastructure planning, social benefits, and leadership benefits. So as we looked at, or as the steering committee looked at those, came upon this five-part framework and looked at all the activities that are ongoing, they really started to recognize those co-benefits, and they actually ended up becoming a lot of the focus is how do we maximize the synergies and the benefits of our recommendations and other programs. And one place that they could look was a really significant history of cooperation between the three entities represented here, the university, the city, and the county. At the public workshop, this banner here, which was produced for that workshop, and we brought it here, looking at the large, just an example of the number of success stories in this arena, a lot of these contribute to lowered energy use, reduced costs, improved health, improved stormwater, and lower carbon emissions. So the steering committee looked at a number of city, county, UVA examples along with private examples in the commercial sector on informing the recommendations that came out of the report. Just a quick little snapshot: green roofs, composting, transportation structures like the Zipcar and an active transportation network, solar thermal and geothermal, all in use in this community and really offering examples to scale up or to reproduce at other entities. I think to paraphrase the discussions that were occurring at the steering committee level, there was an early awareness that a regulatory approach was impossible. One, because we're a bilingual state, and there isn't just the ability of structure, but two, even more, that it was going to be unhelpful to this approach. A lot of this, a lot of the achievements today were voluntary and were and had emerged from that program. The steering committee also recognized a strong and diverse community interest in these topics and a desire to be active in this area. But like I said, the existing community offered a wealth of examples. But I think there's also awareness that the long-term goals, especially of the early commitments, were very difficult to achieve. They cannot be easily achieved. But that was not a reason. There were no obstacles really to begin heading in that direction. So whether 2050 or a long-term goal seem very far off and they seem very difficult and challenging, but there's a lot of activity and a lot of opportunities in the short term, especially opportunities that can deliver those co-benefits pretty quickly. One of the notions was that there's a lot of community interest, community members who really wanted to take an active role in this, but were looking for more information on what to do and how to begin. The report that's been distributed has a section called the Framework Action Strategies that really offer a more detailed five-part framework. It goes into additional detail on each of the strategies and then offers local examples, sometimes with cost savings or other benefits stated right in a document. This is really not an implementation guide, but a kind of a menu of choices. I think actually we called it in some references the Chinese menu or very broad, the deli menu or something of that notion, offering just a broad look at all the opportunities available. And with these discussions and through these, through the process, the document, this slide here comes directly from the report. One of the products was a recommended principles, again, to continue to demonstrate leadership in this arena, to build on existing collaboration and coordination, really integrating the role of energy and carbon in our planning processes, thinking about new activities in terms of carbon. We may think about it in terms of traffic demand or something else, but introducing the currency of carbon, the currency of energy into our discussions. To equip a community to make informed decisions basically by providing good information and a resource, and really to identify and promote actions that capture those synergies that really promote economic health and environmental benefits that accompany those decisions. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tim.
So just as I've been sitting here listening, you kind of keep hearing some reoccurring themes throughout this, and I'm going to start out with the recommended next steps from the steering committee report. This is a condensed version of what shows in the report, but sums it up pretty well. And it starts by acting on the existing commitments, and those come in forms of the public commitments made by the city, county, and UVA, but also internal commitments for energy conservation and fleet management. But to further address the carbon and energy within the considerations, planning and operations. We do a pretty well job of operations, but we're trying to expand out into the planning realm. And so as you've seen, the five-part framework and the action strategies, framework action strategies, to use those documents in the community planning efforts, such as the comprehensive plan and long-term planning efforts. Also to provide regular documents towards progress of reducing energy and emissions. We do baseline reports with updates, but we also produce internal documents for energy conservation measures and to really put some numbers associated with some of these practices and conservation efforts. Also, build on stakeholder involvement developed through this process. Like Crystal mentioned, the steering committee stuck with it and really felt passionate about it. Had several work group members, 50 work group members, that were passionate about it. So the community outreach component was there, and so it's a resource to tap for the local governments and entities to pull from our community that are doing the same things that we're doing with our projects, and to build on that private-public partnership. We also need to celebrate the successes that the private sector. We had the ability to put the banner together for our own successes and things like that, but really want to pull together all of the efforts being done in the community. And this would be in the place of using the framework action strategies for a community toolkit to help provide that local guidance, so that, as Andrew said, people that are interested in doing something can go see what can be done. And we're talking about from the low-hanging fruit level all the way to complex geothermal systems. But there's something for everyone. Also, we wanted to facilitate the topic to stay on everyone's radar. And this would be in the form of annual meeting of management project leaders from UVA City and County to get together and discuss strategies that are actually working and celebrate the successes once again. And once again, the community engagement, keeping the community engaged. Part of what we wanted to stress here today was the steering committee realized that this was a singular report, but also wants to stress that it requires individual action plans tailored for each particular body. UVA, city, and county can address it themselves. And the individual action plan would allow each entity to move forward as it saw fit and really implement the strategies that would work to them. Okay, so while this slide just kind of represents the next three topics are not direct results from the LCAP process, but these were concurrent efforts, and as Crystal alluded to, the Local Energy Alliance program came on the scene between the city and county in between the time in which the steering committee letter went out and the formation of that steering committee. And it was a joint process, project in which a grant formed LEAP to go out and help residents and commercial buildings reduce energy consumption in the community. And so while the LCAP report is not a direct influence of LEAP's initiation, it shows concurrent efforts tied to the same topics and stakeholders within the community. Shortly after that, LEAP embarked on a program with Better World Betty to do a Better Business Challenge, which is currently under currently under enrollment for businesses around the area. And this is just a simple, fun, competition-based program to engage businesses on energy reduction, water reduction, transportation issues, waste reduction. This is just a sample scorecard of what the businesses are seeing. We're only using this. This is not part of the LCAP report in any ways, but we're using this as some of these same low-hanging fruit type things are things that we did as entities as far as benchmarking our energy consumption in buildings, changing out lights and lighting upgrades, and looking at what our impacts are and trying to manage and reduce those. And so it's gotten a lot of support from local businesses such as Mudhouse, State Farm. It's got a lot to build on. Also, not a direct result of the LCAP report or process, the workshop of Seeing Green went to the Small Business Development Center, and they put on this workshop for their local small businesses to help them analyze the efficiencies of what they can do from their business. The importance of going green, performing self-assessments, understanding your utility bills, determining options and available financial resources and assistance. And so we've gotten a lot of cross connections with the economic development side of both the city and county and part of the energy efficiencies. And so kind of as a wrap-up, highlight some of those reoccurring themes that you listen to. This recommends a tailored approach for each entity. UVA, city and county can do it totally separate and focus inward or outward as much or as little as each would want, and still move forward on goals and targets. Based on on diverse community input, I think that's very important. It promotes voluntary actions. The actions we've taken as local governments and public institutes are voluntary. What we're proposing for others would also be under voluntary actions, and just providing information is key enough. Seeks synergies that make economic and environmental sense, and presents a framework for continued leadership by each entity. And so this was step one of the report's rollout. Next, with a recommendation from this board, from this committee, would be a presentation to PAC. Also a presentation to the Board of Supervisors and City Council after that, and UVA Master Planning Council and Committee on Sustainability. So that's the end of the presentation. Any questions?
Before we go to questions, I just wanted to make one comment. Andrew and I are probably the two staff who have been with this process from its beginning. And it's provided a really fantastic way for staff to interact on a number of these issues. And I think it's helped bring some new folks in and out and quickly up to speed, because it provided a structure to some of the issues and topics that we were focusing on. So to some extent, personally, thanks for giving us a chance to get to work closely together, because I think it's been helpful. So, is there any questions or?
I just comment that the act, it's going to PAC, but it's for review and comment. It's not for any action beyond that. And the incorporation of these suggestions, recommendations in any future planning by any of the three entities, I think is an objective that would lace with the comp plan updates. And so I think that a number of things that are here that are worth thought about in that context as well.
As well as tying into the livability.
It does. It does. Out of pure locks.
By careful design. And we've shared copies of this draft have been shared with the PDC and with the respective planning staff. So there's obviously, I'm sure you've noticed, things that need to be copy edited and tweaked and finalized, but that's going to be happening here in the next week. So if there's anything in particular or any points that you think would be important to highlight or emphasize as this goes to PAC, the presentation at that point would be done by Ann Malik, who's one of the steering committee members, and David Brown is the chair of LCAP but is unavailable, so I'll be joining her to help fill in that side of the presentation.
First of all, I was curious, I noticed you tried to measure or reflect the latest available emissions information for City, County, University. Did you discuss at all setting targets for the future?
We discussed it a lot. And
I don't see that they have this.
Right,
include.
And I think it was actually of some of the many issues that the committee had really kind of a spectrum of opinions about it. There were a few folks who felt very strongly that if you don't set a goal, you don't know what to craft your action plan against. And then in the meanwhile, UVA actually has established a goal. There are goals set as part of these public commitments,
right.
But we think it's more important at this point to go back and have each entity consider, are we going to work on near-term goals, long-term goals, and even in the course of this process, you know, 10% from 1990 is a number that gets put out there from the Kyoto Protocol, but most of the community thinks about, you know, the international community thinks about 80% by 2050, so somewhere within that realm, we need to figure out what fits right for our communities. And one of the recommendations, if you look in your report, doesn't just talk about, I just would offer here, there's one about the action plan establishing near-term goals. So really saying, have the conversation about what it does and what the value is, and whether that's a voluntary efficiency number that is applied to the internal operations or that we try to put out there for the community at large and have a mechanism for measuring that. I think Andrew made the great point. There doesn't seem to be any reason why we shouldn't start on this path, but we could debate ad nauseum whether we can get there.
The reason I think probably it's good in your upcoming presentation mm-hmm. just to note that you had that conversation
okay.
where you land is
yeah.
based on that. But
that's a good point.
And the part of what kind of led me to ask the question is one of the land use transportation planning, strategies under energy and mobility is to regularly quantify emissions implications of planning decisions, which is implying that you can measure so that you can see how that collectively is leading towards something that you might be trying to achieve. Very honestly, I don't know how we would quantify emissions of planning decisions right now because I don't know that we have the mechanisms. And it would seem to me that maybe something more practical would be how we might work towards developing that kind of measure here, a way to measure, because I'm not sure we have that. Maybe the city does, maybe the university does. We don't in the county, to my knowledge, as we make decisions on different development proposals as an example.
Well, and I think your point is exactly right. I mean, that's where each community needs to figure out, A, is that one of the action strategies that they want to prioritize and work with? And B, if there isn't a tool, what tools could or should be looked at to achieve that? And it may not be comprehensive, but as Andrew mentioned, kind of bringing that currency of carbon or energy into the consideration without it being kind of an up or down decision point, but just informing the process.
I was just going to say the step from doing the lead process to at least a high percentage of what that suggests is pretty simple. It doesn't catch all of it, and it doesn't by itself require it. But when you do the energy model, to take the step over to see what the carbon footprint is going to be of that energy use over a period of time is pretty straightforward. Now, then you get into the trip analysis and so forth, which isn't necessary for LEED, which would be another thing. That obviously the looking at the different scope impacts up here in transportation is kind of a pleasant way of saying we all drive our own cars, but the reality is the commuting distance that the employment base would have for a given project would then lead to, again, being able to do the carbon equivalent of what that would be over a period of time. And again, it's not, I know it's not a mandate for any of us, but I mean, I think it's doable. And maybe the way to start would be just using the lead model.
And one of the things I thought maybe to suggest that the wording of that particular strategy might be more along the lines of developing mechanisms to quantify.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which gets us to that first place of then being able to see how those projects might actually work. I know we also have Lead MD these days, which mm-hmm. is a way to look at projects on a bigger
right.
on a bigger base than just the building itself. And one question I had under energy in the landscape and maintaining existing forest base and urban tree canopy, there was a bullet that said establish permanent conservation easement on forested landscapes, and I wasn't sure exactly what that meant as a strategy. Obviously, we have easement programs in the county that are some of which are purchased under ACE and some of which are donation, but I'm not sure what established permanent conservation easement on forested landscapes was intended to mean.
I think it was intended to be included here, not specifically for the city and county and university to do, but for the community, the landholders and property owners in the community to think if there are large forested tracts, the benefits of having permanent preservation of those have play into the energy discussion. Whereas some of the easement programs don't just prioritize the forest component of it, but look at water, you know, river access or some other components or criteria. And I think the goal of the steering committee and the group and the working groups who talked on this subject was, and frankly, the forestry folks were very adamant that the best way to have the trees in our community perform their function is to protect them, because it takes a long time for those big tracts to serve the role that they're serving right now. And so I guess that's, to some extent, maybe an encouragement or a suggestion that the county could look at the ACE program and see, are there ways in which criteria and priorities.
So I think you're saying is you're looking at the easement programs and individuals mm-hmm. who might be considering easements to prioritize the establishment of easements on forested landscapes. In other words, to establish that as a priority.
And that could be a way that this yes. action strategy gets applied. But really, those folks, they're not in the business of saying who has to prioritize what, but to say, if we can preserve the forested landscape, in the long term, that's a good thing, because it'll take 50-plus years for those types of mature forests to
That's, you're right.
Yeah.
It's saying that open space isn't all created equal.
Yeah. Right. And our ACE program says that.
Right.
And I just had a really quick observation, which is that at PAC, if this is presented up against the sustainability measurement system, you might want to discuss the correlation between the two.
And I think the sequencing is that this will be presented on the agenda first and that the performance measurements will follow. And so I can talk with Steve ahead of time about sort of
That's
making
right.
that connection so there's a smooth transition. They're definitely not parallel
no,
conversations.
There's a correlation. Yes.
Okay. Anything else? And I'm sure Crystal will be happy to get comments by email.
Yeah. And I'm going out of town next week, so I need them by tomorrow.